Hello and welcome to AcePod 1.4. I am your host, Ace Ambender. There is no guest today, although we have a familiar voice lined up for next week once the NBA draft, which is happening slightly after this podcast is recorded, plays its way out. But for today, we've got a lengthy mailbag segment on both football and basketball, and a little bit of slow jam in the fancy stats one last time for John Beilein. So I hope you enjoy the show. All right, our first question comes from at Harbaugh with a Baugh on Twitter. Starting out with football, since I've been so heavy on basketball lately, he asks, who will be the biggest impact freshman outside of Daxton Hill, Charbonnet, Sain Ristil, or Giles Jackson? That really takes out a lot of the guys that are actually expected to play from this freshman class, but I think there are a few other guys with a chance to see the field, and of those guys, I think Mazi Smith has the best chance to be an impact player. He's a nose tackle, and Michigan needs that very, very badly. He came in the spring, so he's got a bit of a leg up on some of the other incoming freshmen. And he's, you know, a highly regarded All-American defensive tackle who's walked on campus at 303 pounds and didn't look too sloppy. So you don't have too much, you know, bulking up, reshaping the body that you might need out of a usual freshman when they're trying to gain the bulk and strength to be able to play DT at the Big Ten level. Those are things that were considered strengths for him all through his recruitment, and he was quite productive. He had 18 tackles for loss as a senior from the defensive tackle position. That's pretty remarkable. Chris Hinton may also get in there and show that talent that made him a five-star some places and maybe become a better fit than Smith. But in terms of guys who look ready to contribute year one, Smith's a guy who you'd probably pick out walking off the bus. And you can't necessarily say that about a lot of Michigan's depth at DT right now, mostly because there barely is any. You've got Carlo Kemp there as the established guy, but Mike Dwumfor has been a backup in and out of the lineup and injured. And then the backups there are entirely unproven, and Donovan Jeter and Phil Paya. And after that, it's all freshmen. So I expect, even if it's by necessity, which will certainly play a part here, that Mazi Smith is your other impact freshman. Although Zach Charbonnet is the guy I'm definitely looking out for in the fall to make a big impact. I do not think that a preferred walk-on, as great as he is at blocking, is going to be the primary back. And Charbonnet has an unbelievable level of talent. So I kind of am looking at a potential Mike Hart freshman year out of him. I know that's a lofty comparison, but if anybody's got the recruiting profile and tape to go along with it, Charbonnet certainly does. Next question comes from at Brendan for AFC. What is more concerning to you on the defensive side of the ball, replacing Devin Bush at linebacker or the very thin depth at defensive tackle? You can probably guess my answer based on my last one, but it's very much figuring out depth at defensive tackle. They've got 1.5 proven guys there, and then it's a lot of inexperience behind them. So you really do hope that both Smith and Hinton hit early and can hit hard. Because on the flip side, Michigan has done a pretty tremendous job of recruiting inside linebacker talent. I think between Josh Ross, Devin Gill, Jordan Anthony, Cam Agrone, you've got some quality options there for the two inside linebacker spots. I really like Ross's talent. Gill has proven himself to be steady when he started. McGrone is another guy who very much plays like Devin Bush, had tremendous senior film, and probably would have been bumped up to a five-star if he hadn't been injured late in the year. So I'm pretty optimistic. You know, they're not going to get the level of play this year that they did out of Devin Bush last year, but they had all American level play. Linebacker is something that you can hide weaknesses easier at the linebacker level than you can on the front four. Same applies to the back seven. It's tougher to patch up holes back there. So that also plays into this answer is that it's easier to replace a middle linebacker than it is a defensive tackle. And Michigan is really hurting for defensive tackles right now. So yeah, that's probably my biggest concern, even over cornerback on this whole team right now. Our final football question from at David Y. Cook 1 is a simple, straightforward one that I have a difficult time answering. It's straightforward. Over under 10 wins for the football team. And I'll admit I'm a little behind where I'm normally at this time of year because I've usually written a number of the opponent previews for Hail to the Victors, and this year I did not do that. So I haven't gone quite as in depth on Michigan's schedule. I do hate that Army is on it because scheduling service academies just ends up being a nightmare of a closer game than you expected. But I do think it's good that they catch Notre Dame in October instead of at the beginning of the year. Because getting that two teams that are that good in the first game where they're trying to figure out, you know, we saw last season Michigan was still shuffling around with their offensive line. Notre Dame hadn't settled on the right quarterback yet. There was a lot up in the air for both of those teams, and it leads to a lot of variance. And I think if they're just going straight up, I like Michigan's chances straight up against Notre Dame when you kind of eliminate the weirdness that seems to happen annually in that game. So I'm optimistic about that. I'm optimistic about them beating Michigan State. At Penn State is a little worrisome. At Wisconsin is a little worrisome. Some of us who have been through some things might also look at going to Indiana between playing Michigan State and Ohio State at the end of the season as a bit of an unpleasant trap game. But I think I'll call a push on this one. I think they hit 10 wins. There's enough kind of dregs on the schedule where Michigan, even against Army, shouldn't be dropping any unexpected games. You still got Rutgers and Illinois on the schedule. Maryland's still very much coming along. I mentioned Indiana as a trap game, but Indiana tends to lose those trap games even while making them deeply unpleasant. Middle Tennessee State isn't good. And there's kind of a middle that's very workable. We'll see how Wisconsin fares this year after replacing Hornibrook, most likely with a true freshman. Going to play at Iowa or going to host Iowa is definitely less of a nightmare than going to play Iowa on the road, but they are a team that can kind of drag you down to their level. But that's the homecoming game. I sure hope Michigan scheduled a winner for homecoming. And then it kind of comes down to how many do you expect them to win out of at Penn State versus Michigan State versus Notre Dame versus Ohio State. And I kind of feel a split on those right now. I'm very bought into the approach that Josh Gattis is going to bring to the offense. I am just worried about mostly, well, both cornerback and safety, which is concerning when you have both of those as kind of thin spots in conjunction with each other. And obviously, I've mentioned multiple times so far that defensive tackle is a concern. And that if that hasn't gelled by the time they play Ohio State, we know how that goes. So right now there are just too many things up in the air for me to feel confident picking more than 10 wins, but I actually would be a little surprised if they finished below that too. This would have been really tough if the over under was at 10.5 or 9.5. But I believe in Josh Gattis, which actually, I lied. I have one more football question. This one came in by email, which is why I didn't notice it right away, from Dan Kreka. And there's a lot here. So I'll just read it straight through. I'm overall happy with Harbaugh's decision to bring in a spread guy and modernize the offense a bit. I actually believe him when he says that he's giving up control, and I'm generally optimistic that we can have one of the best offenses in the league this year. However, my optimism largely comes from the fact that I think Gattis will do some pretty basic things. One, pass more in general, utilizing our best players. Two, connect the effective inside zone running game to a downfield play action game that stresses defenses, something I felt was missing all last year, and I think Brian has mentioned before. He has. Number three, utilize tempo, please. None of these are rocket science, and I think they could result in a huge improvement on that side of the ball. So my question is, why didn't Harbaugh realize those things were important last year? Whatever his failings at Michigan, this guy is a smart offensive coach who has had success at the highest levels. Why would someone like Jim Harbaugh just forget that it was important to have effective play action or a polished 2-minute drill or throw downfield to your NFL receivers? Best, Dan Kreka. First of all, thank you for the well-thought-out question, Dan. To kind of go at this, it's difficult to parse out when you have a coaching staff that's consistently shifting around. Michigan obviously worked better on an offense. It wasn't great, but it was at least good with Jed Fish at the helm. But I think I would say coaching staff chemistry was not at all where you would have wanted it to be the last couple of years, dealing with two different offensive line coaches 2 years ago, where it just didn't seem like they could ever get on the same page. And then going to the system where you have a run game coordinator, a pass game coordinator, and then Harbaugh making a final decision potentially. First of all, that just takes so much time, which is why Michigan was not utilizing tempo, is you kind of are having the coaches huddle before you have the players huddle, and then you're getting up to the line with 10 seconds on the clock. So obviously, Gattis approaches that in a very different way. We're going to see a much faster team this year. I also think the just too many cooks problem led to the disconnected running game and passing game, where it just never felt like Pep Hamilton was really running the same offense as the rest of the team. The passing game really didn't make a lot of sense, as has been noted both in this email and many, many times before. Michigan just did not push the ball downfield enough when they had an excellent quarterback with a big arm and, a great jump ball option in Nico Collins and a great just run past a guy option in Donovan Peoples-Jones. Tariq Black slowly coming back. There was room for a lot more there. And I'm assuming we'll see that this year. I don't think Jim Harbaugh has forgotten how to coach. I just think coaching staffs are more delicate than some people realize, and he certainly made some mistakes in hiring, but the fact that he has really streamlined this process, I think when you combine the Gattis hire with bringing in Ed Warner last year and getting the offensive line to be a competent and cohesive unit, they took some steps last year, even though a lot of it was kind of hidden behind this disjointed play calling scheme. But Harbaugh has adapted multiple times. It was very encouraging to see them break out the quarterback run game last year, even some run pass options. And so I think there's the groundwork there for a modern offense, and a modern offense that can still, beef up and run over you too. But we've seen Ben Mason shift over to defensive tackle. We'll see how permanent that is, but it at least indicates that fullback is not going to be nearly as prominent as it has been in recent years under Harbaugh. I'd love to see them. We'll see with Gattis how much they're going pure hurry up, no huddle, but the tempo is definitely going to get faster. It'd be almost impossible for it not to. And we should be able to see, play action that is actually connected to the, you know, the arc read stuff and inside zone that, that Michigan was running effectively last year. And we'll be able to see some 2-minute drills that are actually executed in 2 minutes. So, yeah, consider me very much on the Josh Gattis train, because I thought that was a great hire, and that much like how John Beilein adapted, you know, in very major ways and ceded power in his last few years to his defensive assistants, that's what I see this as for Jim Harbaugh, is realizing that he's running some outdated stuff. He's got these coordinators that aren't matching up. So let's bring in a bright young offensive mind and let him actually take over the offense and run his stuff instead of kind of playing a game of telephone before the quarterback even gets the play call. So I'm encouraged. I think they're very much moving in the right direction. They may not have an elite offense this year just because of the transition, but I expect to see a much more exciting passing game and an offense that makes sense. And after the last decade or so, I think we'll all take that. On the other side of this break, we'll discuss some hoops.
There were a few mistakes that I made that I have just recently cleared up. You know. I'd like to just continue to be able to express myself as best as I can in history. You know, I feel like I have a lot of work to do still. You know, I'm a student of the drums. And I'm also a teacher of the drums, too.
Get into some hoops here, both related obviously to Juwan Howard's upcoming tenure as head basketball coach, where there's a lot up in the air. So first one's from CT and TC on Twitter, who asks, besides death to auto bench, what is one new philosophy or strategy that Beilein did not employ that you hope Howard does? This will sound strange coming from, you know, proponents of Beilein, proponents of, you know, utilizing advanced stats, analytics, modern basketball, the way basketball's headed. But I want to see a well-executed post-up so bad. And they've got the personnel where that's stuff that they should be running. And we saw last year that Michigan couldn't even execute a simple entry pass to John Teske, even when he had, you know, a point guard switched onto him. And that really took away some offensive upside. The team wasn't shooting at Beilein's normal level last year with Xavier Simpson running the point. That doesn't project a change this year. So it's time for them to take advantage of what they got. And especially if they decide they need to work in Colin Castleton at the four a little bit. They definitely need to do more high-low kind of action where you're getting an easier time getting a pass in to a player in post-up position. Work that high post a little bit. Just run more of the offense through the center. And I think Teske has proven quite capable. I think he's even got some talent that hasn't totally been tapped into yet. We haven't really seen his post game too much, and he gets surprisingly few easy chances at the basket, or has had surprisingly few easy chances at the basket, given just how physically dominant he is compared to most of the guys he goes up against. So I want to see post-ups, and I never thought I'd say that, but Beilein, there was a graphic posted recently that I think it was from Hoop Vision, that of the 30 winningest head coaches in college basketball over the last, I believe since 2010, Beilein, by a decent margin, ran the fewest post-up possessions. And for Michigan to be good this year, I don't think they're going to be able to replicate that, especially since they no longer have John Beilein squeezing every little bit out of the rest of the offense. So, yeah, post him up. Give it to the big dude. From at Law McLawyerface, what's your definition of success for the first 2 years of Juwan's tenure at Michigan? I think it's pretty simple. I would be impressed with the job he's done if he simply makes the NCAA tournament the next 2 years, at least wins one tournament game in there, and starts bringing in high-level talent that shows that Michigan has changed their recruiting philosophy and maybe embraced the bag a little bit. You know, we talked about this on the MGO pod before, but I'm a proponent of the bag. I do not mind seeing these players get paid. Beilein was pretty much the last holdout and did an incredible job of recruiting given the kind of self-imposed limitations. But I think certainly with the players that Juwan has offered so far, I think we're seeing them go after a slightly higher caliber of recruit, and I really want to see them be able to get into that game, recruit on the level of, you know, you don't have to become a one-and-done factory like Duke or Kentucky, but, you know, at least be up there with, you know, even Ohio State. You know, some of these teams, Michigan State, some of these teams have kind of out-recruited Michigan, where I think with a guy like Howard at the helm, they should start beating out guys for players who are likely to end up in the NBA instead of somebody who needs to be developed into an NBA player, which has mostly been what Beilein has taken in. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a one-and-done who's actually projected to go in the first round, and that's no dig at Iggy Brazdeikis. It's just, you know, Michigan, like the highest-rated guy Michigan brought in under Beilein was Mitch McGarry, and he was not a one-and-done type, although he was absolutely incredible when healthy late in his freshman year. So I think it's, you know, we've put enough distance from the Fab Five that now we've got one of them as a head coach, and I think they can embrace a little bit of that style of recruiting. And it's about time for it. And that could be the thing that finally pushes Michigan through to an eventual national title, which I think at this point, given how close they've come, is what we all want to see. All right, the rest of my basketball discussion is going to be done in a very sultry voice over a soul instrumental as we're bringing back Slow Jam and the Fancy Stats one last time for John Beilein. Hope you stay tuned for it.
Well, In 2016-2017, John Beilein's team won 5 straight games versus ranked opponents. It was the first time a Michigan coach had done that since 1977, and it happened only one other time in school history. I rank that extremely sexy. John Beilein is one of just 3 Big Ten coaches to have back-to-back Big Ten Player of the Year winners. And he's the only one to have done it with 2 different players, Trey Burke and Nick Stauskas. 2 different players? I like that. Teams that beat Beilein's Michigan squads in the NCAA tournament went 6-1 in the ensuing round. 2 of them won national championships, 2 more made the title game. If you have to lose, that's the dignified way. Beilein's last 4 teams all had lower turnover rates than the 2013 squad, which finished number 1 in the country. They were top 20 in each of his last 7 seasons, finishing with 3 straight top 5s. You know what they say about guys who don't turn it over. They have huge offensive efficiencies. After his first 3 seasons, Beilein teams adjusted offensive efficiency dropped below 40th in the nation just once, and it finished top 4 3 times with 3 different leading scorers. Beilein produced 9 draft picks between 2011 and 2018. Michigan had 10 from 1991 to 2010. In 12 seasons, he produced 26% of Michigan's all-time first-round picks. Beilein led Michigan to 9 NCAA tournaments in 12 years, including 5 Sweet 16s. Very Sweet 16s. All in his final 7 seasons. He won the Big Ten with a 6'4" power forward. Kinky. He won the Big Ten tournament after a plane crash. The danger only made it hotter. Finally, John Beilein left Michigan as the winningest coach in school history. There is nothing hotter to say at Michigan than winningest. Thank you for listening to the Ace Pod. We're just going to go out this way. There'll be a new episode next week with Alex Cook. Looking forward.